It's the Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. This is the Larry Kudlow Show. It's great to be with you. Join us during the week. Fox Business Television. Fox Business Television. Name of the show is Kudlow. Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. every day. Can't see us at 4. Text your favorite 9-year-old, and she'll show you how to DVR the show. And here on radio, you can live stream us on the internet, LarryKudlowShow.com, LarryKudlowShow.com, playing all across the country, throughout the world, throughout the solar system, including the Milky Way. We're going to do some stock market work for the next half hour, kind of a lackluster week. Dow is up 127, NASDAQ up 449, the S&P was stronger, up 87. Year-to-date, basically flat, first 2 weeks of the year. Interest rates declined in the Treasury market. Mr. Copper, Dr. Copper, fell again. And not much going on in energy, despite the Houthi attacks. In fact, for the week, crude oil, West Texas, and Brent fell slightly. So let's bring in our guests and get their take. Jeff Kilberg, CEO of KKM Financial. Jim LeCamp, Senior VP Investments at Morgan Stanley. Gentlemen, welcome back. Jeff Kilberg, we were talking earlier with John Carney of Breitbart. I mean, the CPI inflation came in stronger than thought, than expected by Wall Street. And you're up 3.4% for all items, 3.9%. Core, excluding food and energy. Meanwhile, services CPI, 5%, and excluding energy, 5.3%. The Fed's target is 2. I don't see how the Fed is going to start slashing its Fed funds target rate with these kinds of inflation numbers. Inflation is not conquered. What do you think?
You're not wrong, Larry, and it's great to hear you. Happy New Year. But when I look at the CPI data, I think that is one number. I think the Fed has looked at the last 4 or 5 data points, the last 4 or 5 months, and the trajectory for inflation continues to cool. So I do believe they're going to be on track. I'm not as optimistic about 150 basis points of a cut, but 75 basis points to 100 basis points in 2024 only takes us down to 4.5%. So I think that is truly plausible, but they're going to be looking at earnings season. Obviously, you know, profits are the mother's milk of stocks. So we're really going to understand, did companies actually make money in Q4? So I think we have the inflationary going the right way. They're going to want to see how the strength of the economy is, and that's going to be measured right now, obviously, in stocks with Q4 earnings.
But I don't see why, Jim LeCamp, I don't see why the Fed should cut at all. In other words, because actually, even looking at the year-to-year change, that has stopped falling the last several reports. And again, the core rate is, everything's above their target. Services inflation, way above their target. Wage inflation, way above the Fed's target. And you've got a 3.7% unemployment rate, which is, the participation rates may be low, but the actual unemployment rate is very low. I don't see what the case is at all for Fed easing.
If we look back to Jimmy Carter running for re-election, what we had was a Fed that paused, and it spurred about the reacceleration of inflation. So there is a real risk that if the Fed pauses or cuts too quickly and is too proactive to do that, that we could have an even bigger problem on our hand than we had before. And let's not forget that there is a war going on over there. They've already hit supply lines. It's going to hit the energy markets, probably, not necessarily, but probably. So, yeah, I look at the Fed funds futures, and they suggest a 76% probability of a cut in March. And I tend to agree with you, Larry, that I think they have conquered inflation. On the other hand, They're probably looking at mortgage rates, and if you look at mortgage rates and you tie them together with the cost of homeless ownership today, it's really tough. The housing market's been crippled to a degree. It's getting a little bit better, but it's still really tough. And you have a lot of private equity deals that aren't getting done because interest rates are higher than when they originally started putting those deals together. There is stress in the system. There is also oncoming stress in the commercial real estate market that hasn't been bandied about as much as considering how big of a problem that's going to be. So I think they're looking at those things too, and they're hoping to avoid some sort of a commercial real estate slash funding crisis here in the U.S. By cutting rates a little bit. So I think that's on their mind, too.
They ought to wait. I mean, if there's going to be a shock, a negative shock, okay. But it hasn't happened yet.
Correct.
You know, gentlemen, take a look. There was a very good story in, it was either Friday's Wall Street or Thursday's Wall Street Journal. The Fed's bank rescue facility is now up $140 billion. That's how much they
drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Drop in the bucket, Larry.
$140 billion is not a drop in the bucket. That's a lot of money. Come on.
Well, look, and
let me make my point. People are arbitraging. Sure. They're buying the Fed's emergency bank reserve fund, which is below 5%, and then they're depositing them as bank reserves at the Fed, and they're getting 5.25% to 5.5%. So it's a profitable arbitrage for banks. But the point is, $140 billion is $140 billion. That's since last March. I mean, here's my point. They're not as tight as you think they are, okay? They're not as tight from a liquidity standpoint. They're not as tight as you think they are. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I agree with that. But the one point I wanted to bring up is that the overarching theme and why the market continues, in my opinion, to move higher and is going to move higher is because of their balance sheet. They have no plans of really reducing their balance sheet. That is the ultimate shock absorber for any type of event. And I know the war, you know, Jim brings up a great point. There's a lot of wild cards out there. But I look at where the 10-year note is, and I go back to my days when I started my career at the Chicago Board of Trade, trading Treasury futures. The bond market provides leadership. And right now, since we've seen the Fed flinch, they made their pivot, we saw the 10-year note go from 5.1% down to 3.75%. The bond market is telling you that there are cuts coming. Right, wrong, or indifferent, those market cuts are coming from the Fed. And that's where I think the market is looking, where the puck's going. We can count on the fact that the Fed always is going to be behind the curve. They were notoriously wrong. Let's go back to 2021 when they said inflation was just going to be transitory and it popped above 9% in the CPI. So having faith in the Fed has just been a losing proposition.
I think a better case for stocks is profits. Profits have held up very well. And stuff coming in, bank earnings look pretty good. So I think that's a point. All I'm saying is if you think the Fed's going to cut three times or four times or five times, think again. That's what I'm saying. It's a red flag. By the way, the 10-year is 3.94, closed on Friday. Most of the week it was above 4%. I mean, I think the bond market is having second thoughts.
Well, bond market's got a lot more to deal with in terms of supply coming. $9 trillion that we have to issue this year? I think that's a real question for where the rate picture is going, is can we sell as many treasuries as we need to? China's not buying what they were. The banks are already loaded up in them, and some painfully so. And so I think that is going to be an issue for the bond market. When it comes to corporate profits, Larry, I think you're absolutely right. And I think this is the key for investors. Stick with companies that have earnings.
Right.
And if you can stick with companies that have quality earnings through any kind of cycle, money is gravitating towards those companies. And you look at the Magnificent Seven for last year. They had earnings. That's what their peg rates, their PE minus their growth rates. If you look at their peg rates, they're actually still reasonable compared to the rest of the market, and it's because those companies had earnings. And I think investors are going to be fine if they stick with the market could still be narrow, but if you stick with those quality earnings companies, I think the market will reward that.
Well, and I do think you're right, the Magnificent Seven. I mean, I think the revolution in fast computing and AI and so forth will enhance productivity, which in turn will enhance profits. It will also enhance wages. I mean, I agree with that argument. That's the Ed Yardeni argument or the Kathy Woods argument. I think that's a good argument. I'm not so sure about the goods side of the calculation. Let me look at this. Industrials were up 6/10. Materials down 1%. Energy down 2.5%. What's your call on energy, Jeff Kilberg?
I think energy, you have to be really selective. And we talk about, you know, and Jim brings up a great point, owning essential names. You know, I'm the portfolio manager, Larry, of the Essential 40. And we really focus on owning big names. So Chevron, ExxonMobil, names we want to own. But I think energy has the ability to bounce back, but it has been counterintuitive. And we don't see demand coming out of China. China ultimately is going to drive the boat, which is correlated to Dr. Copper that you talked about earlier. So until we really see China come back online, which it hasn't come back on nearly, this is going on year four from the COVID shutdown. So that will be the real driver. But I think energy has the ability. But we look at names kind of off the radar outside of the Magnificent Seven. So you talk about Palo Alto. You talk about IBM, who's playing in the cloud. You talk about Intel. Some of these names that are coming back, and even a new addition to the portfolio this year was Lilly and American Waterworks. You talk about American Waterworks, AWK, it's off the radar. It's only a $25 billion market cap, but we talk about water and the essentiality of water. I think we want to own names because it is a stock picker's market.
That's a big play, the water play, isn't it? That's a really sort of under the radar type play.
That's right.
I want to take a break, but Jim LeCamp, just give me 30 seconds. Microsoft has now got a bigger market cap bigger cap than Amazon. Did I get that right?
You're looking at two companies that are pretty permeated into our economy.
Or Apple. Maybe it's bigger market cap than Apple.
It's a trillion bigger than Amazon. You got that right.
Yeah, okay.
Amazon's $1.6 trillion, Microsoft north of that. Plus, with Microsoft, you have a better earnings growth looking picture, and you have that tie that's a little stronger to alternative artificial intelligence than Amazon, even though both companies could claim that they're very tied in.
They're very smart, Microsoft.
Yeah,
you know,
they are.
I dealt with them when I was in the government. I dealt with them on 5G and, you know, advanced virtualization and so forth as a way of getting. They're very smart, Microsoft. It's interesting to me that company is
$2.89 trillion as your market cap.
Wow.
Trading at 37 times earnings, but you've got a pretty strong earnings projection for both this year and next. And not telling people to buy it or not buy it, I'm saying there are reasons why investors have flocked to that.
All right, kids, let's take a break and come back, and I've got some interesting things for you. Jeff Kilberg of KKM Financial, Jim LeCamp of Morgan Stanley. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back talking stocks.
This is the Larry Kudlow Show.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Now, back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. We're talking stocks with Jeff Kilberg, CEO of the KKM Financial, and Jim LeCamp, Senior Vice President for Investments at Morgan Stanley. Gentlemen, we've got 4 minutes to hash over the new Bitcoin ETF. You knew it was coming. Bitcoin, which is up 116.5%. over the last 52 weeks, although it did drop a point this past week, $42,905.95. Jeff Kilberg, are you investing in this new ETF?
You know, Larry, it's an old adage from the floor. Buy the rumor, sell the fact. And if you look at the 70% move higher in this highly anticipated ETF, and I'm a believer in blockchain and believer in Bitcoin longer term, but I actually have a trade on right now. I'm shorting Coinbase, which is highly correlated. Mm-hmm. It's the largest platform. So I'm shorting Coinbase right now through options. I own a put spread, but I think it's overdone. I think there's a pullback. I think you see Bitcoin go lower. Why, Larry? I don't see the institutional adoption. I understand all the hodl. I understand all the hype, but I don't see the institutional adoption yet. Yes, this ETF is now going to provide advisors, smart advisors like Jim, to potentially give their clients some access to this cryptocurrency, but I just don't think it's going to be linear. It's not going to be parabolic like all the hype out there.
Jim LeCamp, that's the nicest thing anybody's ever said about you. Did you hear that? Don't let that go.
It's a short list.
I mean, don't let that go, man. I've known you about 30 years. That's a lovely thing to say. But the fact is, will you recommend the ETF to your clients?
If you look at the history of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, and we'll narrow it down to Bitcoin and Ethereum because those are the ones that seem to have the most gravitas. Buying them on 50% corrections is the way to go, not buying them near all-time highs. So I agree with Jeff. I don't think this is the right place to do it. And if you look at these Bitcoin ETFs, I think Merrill Lynch and Vanguard have said, we don't know if we want our investors in this or not. There is still a lot of skepticism from the wirehouse community on whether these ETFs are really going to be something they can put their weight behind. So I think it's going to be more like these meme stocks. And by the way, if you look at some of those meme stocks, they're back near all-time lows. So I think investors have to be really careful about chasing those things. I do also agree that the outlook for fintech and blockchain is very, very good. And so we have some blockchain investments. I'm just not speculating right now at these prices in either the Coinbase-type stocks or the cryptocurrencies after the big move.
Coinbase is solid, right? I mean, publicly traded, SEC reporting, and so forth. So, I mean, whatever you think the outlook is, short-term, long-term, I mean, it's a real company, right?
It's volatile. It's a real company, but it's volatile. It was up 391% in 2023 after being down 85% in 2022. So if you have the stomach for it, yeah, it's real. It's publicly traded, Larry, but you're talking about a company that's a $31 billion market cap, and it moves.
Is the ETF
it was trading at over 400, and then a couple of years later, it's trading in the 20s. So that's the kind of volatility you're talking about.
Well, I wouldn't put the family jewels in it, that's for sure. But the ETF was for Bitcoin alone, not Ethereum or any of the others. Is that correct?
There's more than one ETF there. My understanding is that the Grayscale offering, which is the one that's most prominent out there right now, is based on Bitcoin. But I'm not an expert.
It's all Bitcoin right now. And you're seeing the biggest guys actually came in. BlackRock just went over $10 trillion. They're kind of seeing the most asset flows. But you did see $5 billion going to these ETFs on day one, Larry. So it's real. It's tangible.
Well, that was my bid. No, that was gold. That $5 billion was my bid. But I decided to pull it at the last moment. I DK'd the trade. Just
you don't want to lose your invitation to Davos because of Bitcoin investing.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And you know, as old as I am, I still own the S&P index. I mean, it's old as I am. Jeff Kilberg, wonderful. Jim LeCamp, wonderful gentlemen. Happy New Year to both of you. We'll see you back soon, folks. We're going to take a break, and then other side. Some money politics with Liz Peek and Steve Moore. I'm Kudlow.
From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. We're going to do some money and politics. Iowa Monday, New Hampshire a week later, the following Tuesday. Right here, live and in color, Liz Peek, Fox News contributor, syndicated columnist. Steve Moore, FreedomWorks, Committee to Unleash Prosperity Hotline, and on most of these same radio stations, WABC radio host for More Money. More Money. Okay. Liz Peek, Hertz, you're a keen financial student. Hertz rental sold all 25,000 of its electric vehicles. Cost them $250 million loss. They were Joe Biden's favorite company until they just sold all their EVs. And I just want to add to that, it's very cold in Iowa. Where's John Kerry now that we need him? Okay, yeah. Where is he? Because this is not global warming, Liz. This is global freezing in Iowa.
I tell you, yeah, Larry. Friday, competing headlines: 2023 hottest year on record. Global vortex coming. What will you do about it? I mean, really, it was wonderful. Look, the Hertz thing is really a great story in the sense that Hertz has a number of times. Placed their bets on EVs, the most recent time coming out of bankruptcy, and you could even argue that some of their bankruptcy problems had to do with allocating billions of dollars to bad ideas, including EVs, in the past. This isn't their first effort to go that direction. But guess what? Renters don't want them. And I heard a great story from somebody yesterday who was going to a wedding, and some friends of theirs rented a car from Hertz. They were given an EV, not told it was an electric car. They didn't even realize it for the first couple of hours of driving. And then all hell broke loose. They couldn't find a place to charge it. They got a charger that was slow. They were late to the wedding reception. I mean, it was a complete fiasco. And it really gives you a sense of just how misguided this idea was. I mean, it was totally kind of impractical idealism, if you will, over the practicality of people wanting to rent a reliable car. So, yeah, it's going to cost them hundreds of millions of dollars to sell their EVs, because guess what? The price of used EVs went down 30% last year. There's not much market for them because the new ones aren't selling.
Who the hell's going to buy a used EV? Yeah. I mean, honestly, not even Steve Moore will buy any. And Steve's not a brilliant financial person the way you are, Liz. But even Steve Moore is going to stay away from a used EV. It's like a used cup of coffee or something. I don't know.
Well, I mean, it's just crazy because the prices are higher, the maintenance cost is higher. Hertz management said collision costs are higher. I've done some research on this. The average collision on an EV is $950 more to fix than a gas-powered car. There are all kinds of problems with these things, but it took Hertz to kind of say, hey, you know, line in the sand, this isn't working.
You know, Steve, I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek. I mean, first of all, Liz is so smart. She's up to speed on this stuff. She didn't know it was coming. I don't think she knew it was coming, but she's great. So that's a big plus.
Well, she reads the hotline.
She reads the hotline. Yes, she does. Okay.
True, I do.
But the other thing I want to say is, you know, where's John Kerry now that we need him? Because it is 30, whatever it is, 30 below in Iowa, 40 below in Montana. It's very cold. It's often very cold in the month of January, for heaven's sakes. And sometimes it gets very hot in August, okay? This Biden-esque, John Kerry-esque global warming emergency, it's a hoax. The whole thing is a hoax. Over 100 years, let's see. In which case, Bjorn Lomborg's idea of technology innovations and economic growth will take care of it. We'll figure this out. But this whole thing, socialist Green New Deal, I'm just saying, it's a hoax. There is no emergency. There is no existential threat.
Well, Larry, I mean, you're so far behind the times because it isn't global warming anymore. It's climate change.
I know.
The reason that they changed the nomenclature to climate change from global warming is that any change in any direction, you know, whether it's floods or droughts, whether it's snow or heat, whatever it is, it's all climate change. And that way you can't refute anything they say, because no matter what happens with the weather, seriously, this isn't science but no matter what happens, it's due to, quote, climate change. Look, the temperature of the planet over the last 100 years is warm by, I think best estimates about 1 degree.
Right.
By the way, a little warming is a much, much, much better thing for the planet than a little cooling. Mm. I mean, people are much more susceptible dying when you have freezing cold weather than when it's hot outside. But the fundamental flaw of the whole climate change thing is, does anybody here, look, the government can't fix the potholes. They can't balance the budget. They can't get the border you know, straight. They can't, you know, get fix the tax system. They can't do anything. And it's you've got to have incredible faith in government to think that these nitwits are going to change the temperature of the planet. And so I think that's why, you know, I think there's more and more skepticism. And I'm the thing about the EVs, and you guys are right. I mean, this has been a disastrous year and a half for the EV market. You know, you've got four of the major 10 EV companies that are basically in bankruptcy right now. I think you used the word fiasco, Liz, and that's exactly right. And the more I think about it, you know why it's such a fiasco? If we had just kept the government out of it, I think that the electric vehicle market would be in much better shape. I mean, when you have the government trying to force feed this stuff, and if you look at states, I was just looking at an analysis of where people are buying electric vehicles and where they're not. Well, guess what states they're buying them in, Larry?
California,
New York, New Jersey, right, the blue states. So it's become a kind of the title of my column this week is Biden cars.
Yeah,
EVs are Biden cars. Biden, you know what?
Right.
And nobody wants to, you know, if you're conservative, you know. So it's become so political that I think that's been a curse for the electric vehicle market, not a blessing.
Well, my piece was, it's going to be cold in Iowa. Drill, baby, drill.
Exactly.
Right. I mean that's my conclusion. All right. Because, first of all, if it's cold, you need heat and electricity. So that's a good thing. Let's get some from fossil fuels. I don't know how the windmills are going to do if it's 40 degrees below in these places, Iowa, Montana. I don't know. I'm just saying it's a hoax. It costs over $1 trillion, Liz. And if Joe Biden's reelected, they're going to come at it again. If he can get it through Congress, he'll come at it again. And we shouldn't do that. What happened? Republicans used to believe in all of the above. Maybe they still do. But all the above doesn't mean all the above $1 trillion. That's the key. And they voted for that bill, right? Yeah. They voted for the infrastructure bill. Remember?
They did not vote for the Inflation Reduction Act,
which is
entirely a climate bill. And that was voted 100% Democrats, and Kamala Harris had to break the tie on that, if you recall. So this is the Democrat legacy. But it isn't just the EV situation that is running into a brick wall. It's pretty much all of the climate agenda. It's very interesting. I mean, around the world, governments are falling who have embraced policies, pro-climate policies that voters simply do not like. Mm. And you can see it in Holland and in England. They've rolled back various restrictions. In Germany, they've done that.
Italy.
And by the way, we just had a giant natural gas deal done in the United States.
Yeah.
It was announced Friday. Why is that? Because the industry now has sort of taken heart. They found their big boy voices, and they decided that, yes, we're fossil fuel producers, and guess what? We're going to be using fossil fuels for the foreseeable future. The United States is becoming a big exporter of LNG because the world needs our natural gas, and so we're willing to invest in this. I mean, honestly, the fact that we had companies like Exxon and so forth saying, oh, we're really into green energy. Where's their brain?
Yeah.
Well, where's their courage?
But
really?
The Bidens have tried to regulate. They don't want any new LNG installations. That rule came out, too, which is insanity.
They just passed a methane rule on Friday.
The utter insanity.
Yep.
Utter, total insanity. You know, Trump up there talking drill, baby, drill in Iowa. He's very smart. I mean, remember, Iowa is an ethanol state, among other things.
But you
need to mix it in with gasoline. I mean, ethanol is one of the great ripoffs of all time. But if it wins in Iowa, what the hell?
It's not even economic. I mean,
it's not even
environmentally friendly. It's ridiculous. But
we're
stuck with it.
The ethanol debates are so wonderful. I'll go back in the White House one morning in a senior staff meeting. We get to yelling at each other about ethanol. Okay, I did not want the ethanol giveaway to Chuck Grassley and Joni Ernst, even though I liked them very much. Of course, I lost. You always lose. But Chief Kelly, remember General Kelly was the chief of staff, and he starts telling the story how he went out and bought one of these big lawnmowers. Okay. And he put a big one, electric, whatever, gas-powered lawnmower. I don't know. I don't do lawnmowers. And he put ethanol into it, and it destroyed his new machine.
Yeah.
And so therefore he was siding with the anti-ethanol crowd.
It's all about lived experience, Larry.
Yeah. No, I mean, he wasn't really a policy guy, and he never said he was, but he just had this – he ruined his lawnmower. All right, we will – let's take a break on that note, lawnmowers. We have other things to deal with. Liz Peek, Fox News contributor, syndicated columnist. Steve Moore, Committee to Unleash Prosperity Hotline. And please, folks, listen after this show – WABC Radio, more money from Steve Moore. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
Larry Kudlow. From Wall Street to the White House, this is the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. I'm Larry Kudlow. We're talking money and politics with Liz Peek, Fox News contributor and syndicated columnist, and Steve Moore, Committee to Unleash Prosperity Hotline. And right after this show on most of these same stations, More Money, WABC radio host of More Money. All right, kids, so there I am reading the Wall Street Journal. I guess it was yesterday. Maybe it was Thursday. Big article. And lo and behold, Steve Moore seems to think that if Joe Biden is reelected, taxes are going to go up. A peculiar point of view. So here we have Steve Moore in the flesh. And I thought I'd ask, is that true, Steve? If Joe Biden is reelected, are taxes going to go up?
Through the roof. And, you know, it's important because if Biden were reelected, and, you know, there's a lot of question about whether he'll even be the nominee, but if he were reelected, then, you know, he's laid out his tax plan. And that was in his budget that, you know, this is their grand plan. Mm. And it is catastrophic. I mean, it would almost double the capital gains tax. It would raise the highest income tax rate back up to 40%. It would tax unrealized capital gains, which I don't think we've ever done in the history of this country before. You know, so somebody, let's say an Iowa farmer who made a $3 million gain on their farm valuation would have to pay a tax on it, even if they don't have the money to pay it. The corporate tax, which, you know, we got down to, what, 21%, Larry, they want to raise that to 28%. And when you add all these taxes together, nobody's going to want to invest in this country. The tax rate on a investment of, say, $1 million, and let's say you make $1 million, would be over 50%, closing in on 60%. So this would essentially reverse all of the gains that we've made since the Reagan administration, mm-hmm. in terms of having a lower tax rate system that, you know, that has really created strong economic growth. I think people have to be, you know, wake up, America. This is coming. And if Biden wins, he could even say, look, I have a mandate to do this.
Well, I think, I think Trump's done a good job getting that out there.
Yeah, he has.
The difference. He's been on message. By the way, Steve, just we'll let Liz in on a second, but the Bidens are, you know, Janet Yellen is in favor of these foreign taxes, these OECD taxes.
Yes, he is.
On
he is.
American companies and American profits, particularly our technology companies, because Europe doesn't have any technology companies to speak of.
Yeah, and you'd think our president would be defending American companies,
right?
Piling on them. And by the way, Larry, I got to ask you a question because I'm getting asked this a lot by reporters. You probably know better than I do. What is Trump's position on the global minimum tax?
Oh, listen, I can tell you from his first term, having worked through this with him
right. In
some detail, his view is a very simple view. Foreign governments do not have the right to tax American companies.
Good.
Only America has
good.
The right to tax
good.
Or, you know, lower taxes.
It's called sovereignty.
It is a sovereignty issue. He saw it with great clarity. And actually, personally, I communicated that to the French finance minister who was cooking all that stuff up, and none of that stuff went anywhere. Mnuchin didn't like any of that stuff either over in the Treasury Department. But no, Biden will. Look, Liz, you know, if you listen to Biden's rhetoric, it's still how the Trump tax cuts only helped rich people.
Yeah.
And therefore should be repealed. And, you know, Biden is still attacking companies for inflation. I noticed the other day he still went after them, too. I mean, this guy's just a complete dopey dope.
Yeah, I mean, it's really pathetic. He talks about how they upped prices, basically, and they made excessive profits as a result. I mean, I went through in a piece, you know, what the profit margins of all U.S. companies combined look like. In fact, they went down when inflation hit because they didn't raise prices right away to counter the big increases in labor and supply chain costs and energy costs that they were suffering. And then they did, and they got back basically where they had been. There has been no excess profit margin over the time of Joe Biden's presidency. But I want to go back to this issue of Biden versus American corporations. His administration is trying to take down all our biggest, best corporations through antitrust charges at Google and Apple and other companies of that ilk. What is the? Tell me what the point of this is. Tell me why he has allowed this Lina Khan in the FTC to try to bring to heel our biggest and best corporations. I mean, other companies, countries around the world must be looking at this and saying, these are flagship American companies who have literally created trillions of dollars of wealth, hundreds of billions of wealth for most Americans, because most Americans now own stocks, and they probably own these stocks. So what? Tell me what they've done wrong. I mean, I think this is quite an assault on our corporate leadership of a kind we've never seen before.
Well, don't get no argument from me. Listen, I'm for the Gilded Age. That's my favorite period in American history, roughly 1865 to 1910. There was no income tax for anything. And these companies that you described, now let's look at this, the technology story. Steve, we were talking about this the other night on the show. It was last night. I don't know. I lose my mind. They start out with new tech. You know, I think you were using who was it? Which is you that was using the telephone as an example? Maybe the new cell phones. Anyway, cell phones were very expensive when they first started out. Mm-hmm. Those Motorola things, $4,000, whatever it was. You know, now they've come down to what, $100, couple hundred bucks.
Yeah.
So middle income people and lower income people benefit from technological breakthroughs, but you got to let these companies make a buck, right, in order for them to begin to parse down their costs and their prices and improve the technology. Furthermore, the Trump tax cuts increased real wages. I mean, look, even the Bret Stephens article in the New York Times where he takes off after Trump, he says, but here's why Trump is formidable. Real wages went up after the tax cuts. I mean, it's important stuff. It's got to get out there.
Well, that's right. And, you know, the number, I think his strongest argument among many, if it does turn out to be Trump v. Biden, is, you know, that the average income for the middle class family in America went up by $6,000 in real terms, Larry, over Trump's presidency.
$6,400. Kevin Hassett's number. He was right.
It was. It's the sensitive. But hold
Tyler
on.
Tyler Goodspeed
under,
was right.
Under Biden, you know what number is?
Yeah, it's gone down $4,000.
Not four. It's about three because we had some increases this past year, but about $3,000. So that's a $9,000 swing.
That's right. No, that's right. That's exactly right. I don't know what else to say. Liz Peek, you got to read this article, both of you.
The Bret Stephens article?
Yes.
I just did. I thought it was excellent. He's putting it out there as here's the case to make for Donald Trump, who I will try to defeat.
Right.
But I tell you if you take out that one sentence.
I worked with him at the Wall Street Journal, and he hates Trump.
I know, but
he hates Trump.
But he's
basically. He really summarizes why he got elected in 2016 and why he could get elected again.
That's right.
It's obviously the stuff we all talk about. Better economy. Frankly, better international relations. All this bloviating about how he destroyed NATO, et cetera. Not true. Exactly.
I got to jump. You both are wonderful. Everybody listen to Steve Moore's radio show. Following this show, I have most of these same stations. And always listen to whatever Liz Peek happens to say. I'm Kudlow. We'll be back next weekend, folks.
This is Greg Kelly for Priority Gold. What does it mean to be America's precious metals dealer? It means that you're in touch with the hearts and minds of those who love this country, value our freedom, and want to protect the future. Priority Gold is that precious metals dealer. They've helped thousands of Americans back their retirement with solid gold and silver. Call Priority Gold at 888-506-6439. Receive free shipping, free storage, a free investment guide, and one of the best purchase experiences in the industry. Call now or go to PriorityGold.com.